Hey, do you remember A League of Their Own? Hello, and welcome to Hey, Do You Remember?, a show where we reminisce about a movie or TV series we grew up with, then take off the rose-tinted glasses to see how it holds up today. I'm Chris.
I'm Donna.
And I'm Carlos.
And today we're revisiting A League of Their Own. It's 1943, and baseball's best and brightest are overseas fighting in World War II. With America's favorite pastime in danger of becoming obsolete, a plan is hatched to form the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. Originally intended as a cheeky novelty, the league is transformed into something else entirely by the incredible women who've been plucked from obscurity to participate in it. Donna, all the way, Ray. What do you... Oh, sorry. That wasn't nice. Wait. I thought it was supposed to be this nice tie into the film, but... What do you remember about the movie, you big slut? Sorry.
Big slut?
Oh.
I... This was a really serious... Like, I loved this movie so hard. Just so hard. So I had I actually really liked Madonna at the time because my name is in her name, and I didn't know that many pop singers. She was really great at the time, too. So I had the cassette tape single of This Used to Be My Playground. And so I had been listening to it in preparation for the movie. And my mom took me to see it, I remember. And I loved the movie. I loved it. I sat there and I watched it and I loved it. And, you know, maybe like a little sneaky tear here or there. But mostly I held it together in the theater. And so when I was a kid, I was really into feminism, like really into it. Like I was reading autobiographies of like Susan B. Anthony and Marie Curie, and I wanted to be a suffragette for Halloween.
Wow.
My mom said, no, that's just too far. But I was so into it, and I did not like sports, but I sure did like the women's movement. So I went to see this movie and enjoyed it very, very much. And my mom, you know, we went home, she took me home, and I just like really quietly went into my room and closed the door and bawled for like an hour.
Oh no.
An hour. This is the first movie that I was ever inconsolable after. And I, you know, I held it together to be in private to lose it, but man, did I lose it. And like, you know, 5 or 10 minutes later, my mom comes in and finds me like sobbing. It's like, what is going on?
Oh,
what
no.
happened here? This used to be our playground. And I was so distraught that why can't women play baseball now? And it's just unfair. And it's just so sad. And she was like, you can play baseball if you want to play baseball. Like, it's not professional, but right now you couldn't play professional baseball anyway. So let's just sign you up for softball. So she did, and that was very nice. And I was just the worst.
Oh no.
The worst softball player there ever was. But
no doing the splits to catch a fly ball. None of that.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I would like fall over and never catch the ball and never hit the ball. It was very bad. But I watched this movie again, and wouldn't you know it, a day later, I've agreed to join a softball team.
Oh, no kidding. Like right now, you just did that?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Hey. Wow, that's amazing.
We'll see.
I watched this movie and decided to become a fall down drunk. So
nice. So nice.
Carlos, what about you?
The first time I saw this movie was on VHS cassette. in our VHS player.
There it is.
my aunt lent the film to me and my brother. We proceeded to watch it about 30 times over maybe a 3-week span.
Wow.
We laughed. I mean, yeah, I guess I would have been about like 9-ish when I saw it. And we laughed every time Tom Hanks does the gritted through his teeth, like, you can all kiss my ass. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. We laughed so hard at that every single time.
I would say half of his lines in this are still laugh out loud moments for me.
He's so great in this. Yeah. Everything he says is a gem. We saw that a bunch and had the movie pretty much memorized, to the point where if I see it now, like when we watched it again, I pretty much finished every sentence. Like I knew, I knew all of the lines. So this movie is very special to me. It's part of my childhood. It's probably my favorite baseball movie. So now cut to me at about, I guess I would have been about 23, 24. They're shooting the film Stranger Than Fiction, like down the street from where I live. So I go outside, I'm walking to the train, and they're shooting at the movie theater across the street from the train. And I see a guy in the crew, and I'm like, oh, what are they shooting here? And he's telling me, oh, it's Stranger Than Fiction, Will Ferrell, yada, yada. He's like in character, and you can only speak to him as his character, which I thought was really weird. And then he starts telling me about all the movies that he's worked on in the Chicagoland area through his, 30 years or whatever doing this. And A League of Their Own was one of them. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. I love A League of Their Own. This guy, you got to mention, like straight out of Central Casting. He's a Teamster, very like blunt. And yeah, would have been played by like the guy who played Paulie Walnuts in Sopranos. So I was like, oh my God, what stories do you have about A League of Their Own? Like, I'm expecting like these great Tom Hanks stories or something. He goes, oh, well, we shot some of it out in, Indiana. And then there were these, there was a diamond out there, and they needed to, rent out all of these little, cabins at like a camp. And, you can please edit out as much of this as you need to.
Uh-oh.
He's like, there were all these dykes, and, they were just kissing each other and fucking each other. And it was, I was like, okay. I'm expecting like, I rediscovered my love for baseball that summer, but no, all he could talk, the only thing he could remember from that movie was that Madonna was quote a piece, and that all of the, all of the dyke kissing and fucking.
What? Okay.
Yeah. So, me and the movie had a strained relationship after that.
Oh no!
Because all I can remember is this dirty man when I try to watch it. But in all seriousness, every time this movie is on, I have to watch at least 15 to 25 minutes of it.
Mm.
But I haven't seen it through its entirety since we picked up this project. So.
Well, so my earliest memory of the movie is being in a Sam Goody music store where I paid for an audio cassette with my own money for the very first time. It was it was the Wayne's World soundtrack.
Yes, it was.
And and they had all this promotional material up for A League of Their Own, which I guess was about to come out in theaters. And because that soundtrack was huge, like even though, the Madonna song was not on it. In fact, all of the CDs and tapes had this sticker on the front of them that said, hey, dummy, we know what you're looking for and it's not here. So they were like, it's just this disclaimer saying that, the Madonna song is on her new album. It's not on the soundtrack.
Wow.
And they also did that with, I don't know if you guys remember the Weird Al album, Alapalooza, where the cover was the Jurassic Park. Instead of a T-Rex, it's Weird Al. And they had a sticker on that one that said, this is not the soundtrack to Jurassic Park. And even as a 10-year-old, I remember thinking, if someone's stupid enough to confuse these, they don't deserve to get their money back. But I don't remember being particularly fired up about seeing this movie. I think at that point, the only draw for me probably would have been Tom Hanks. I didn't think it looked bad or anything. I wasn't dying to go. So like Carlos, I didn't see it till it was on video. And I remember that before the movie, there was a commercial for, I think it was Boboli Pizza Crust. And it had the real life women from this league, and they were making a pizza and throwing the ingredients around like it was a ball game. And that was, the first time I was aware, like, oh, this was like an actual thing. This is sort of based on a true story. I had no idea, like, this league actually existed. And so I watched it with my sisters. I loved it. It may have been one of the first really bittersweet movies that I ever watched. Like, you know, it ended and I felt really happy, but also really sad. In case you guys don't know the definition of bittersweet. Let me toss out one.
Are those the emotions?
Let me toss out one word that perfectly sums it up, and then go back and explain it in pointless detail. How does that sound? So, and this was also my introduction to spoilers, because we were having dinner that night, and my mom and stepdad, they hadn't watched it yet, but my mom asked, you know, oh, how'd you guys like the movie? And I said, I did. I liked it a lot, but I was so upset that Tom Hanks' character is dead in the present day. And my mom glared at me and was like, damn it, Chris. And that was the first time I was aware that, like, oh, no, like, people don't like when you do that. You can't do that. And so and then I also remember that after I saw the movie, I asked all of my grandparents what they remembered about this women's baseball league. And, like, you know, because they all must have been right there as this was happening. And every single one of them said, what are you talking about? They had no memory of this whatsoever. They'd never heard of it. And the movie had made it out to be this incredibly significant moment in history and in pop culture, but it apparently passed right by my family. So, I mean, it still surprises me, because this wasn't like some flash in the pan sort of, I mean, this league ran until the mid-50s, I think. So yeah, just not on their radar though. The main thing I remember though is that I've always been like, so it's never been enough for me to just consume a piece of entertainment and just like enjoy it. I usually want to create my own version of it. I can't just hear stories. I want to go tell my own stories. I can't just read comics. I want to make a comic. It's how this podcast got started. And anyone that listened to our Dick Tracy episode knows, so if I love something, I want to get in there and try doing it. And the same was true of this movie. So I put on my sister's dress and went to the baseball field. That's not true. But instead of just signing up for Little League or something, I decided that I didn't want to play baseball. I wanted to manage a baseball team like Jimmy Dugan. But in order to do that, I needed a team, and that team would need other teams to play against, and those teams would need managers. Yeah. But this was no problem, because there were plenty of kids in my neighborhood. I just needed a call to action. So I made these flyers, handwritten on notebook paper, and I hung them on all these light posts all over the neighborhood. And they basically said, hey, I'm starting a baseball league. Do you want to play on one of the teams? Do you want to be a manager? My name's Chris. I'm 10 years old. Here's my address. Here's my phone number. It might as well have said, here's when my parents are at work so you can catch me home alone. Right. And I'm ready to go, man. I'm like, I'm picking out the outfit I'm going to wear for the first meeting, because I want to look the part. And I'm figuring out how we're going to divide up the teams and the speech that I'm going to make to everybody. And meanwhile, my stepdad's driving home from work and sees one of my flyers taped to a stop sign. And he tells my mom, and they confront me about it. And I don't understand why, but they are horrified. So I have to get in the car with my stepdad and drive around the neighborhood taking down all these signs. I was crushed. This dream was not to be. But yeah, I loved this movie. We watched it so many times. It was one of the first DVDs I bought once I got a DVD player. I've never stopped loving it. And you know, being in Chicago, I hear the words Rockford and Racine all the time. And to me, Rockford always means peaches and Racine always means bells. And like, sometimes I'll randomly I'll get lines of dialogue stuck in my head the way, you know, most of us get songs stuck in our heads. And usually from this movie, it's Gary Marshall's line about, like, what are we supposed to do? Send the men returning from war back to the kitchen? So I know, Carlos, you sent us a message the other day asking if we were aware of the TV show that was based on the movie.
And it
came out the year after this. I think John Lovitz and Marla, Betty Spaghetti, they all came back. I think Gary Marshall maybe guest starred in an episode or two. Yeah. But everybody else, every other role was recast. And it was fucking awful. Like, even as a little kid, I thought it was bad. I watched the first episode and was like, whoa. They're fucking up the movie because it involved Dottie coming back to play for the Peaches again. And I was like, nah, that didn't happen. This explicitly contradicts the ending of the movie. It only lasted, I don't even know if it finished its first season before it was canceled.
Didn't even finish the first episode. They're like, nope, cut it.
Done. I think it's very telling that most people don't even remember that it was a thing. So
I didn't remember it. I found it while I was doing research for this. I was like, what? I am pretty up on my TV watching. Never heard of this. Like, never.
Yeah.
Now it makes me wonder what other movies had TV shows that I didn't know about.
Ferris Bueller. There was a TV show about that with Jennifer Aniston in it.
I knew that.
What are the other really random? Oh, Police Academy.
Okay. They had a cartoon. I remember the cartoon.
Yeah, there was a live action show where some of the, like, the original Police Academy guys were now teachers at the academy, and like Tackleberry was teaching the new recruits.
Interesting. I think that a League of Their Own movie could really work today. Or a movie. Of course the movie would work. I think a TV show could work if, you know, because now I think we know how to do period TV shows now.
The thing I was trying hardest to remember is what – because, even when you look at the movie, the scale of it isn't enormous. In terms of, like, the period setting, that we're basically in baseball stadiums and, you know, wherever the women are staying overnight. Like, that's sort of the limit of what we're getting. And that was so, but even like, how does a TV show in 1993 portray a baseball game? Even how do you fill a stadium? Like, you can't do that even then. And the scenes I do remember of the show, it felt very small. It wasn't shot like when you think of like a 1 hour drama is. It was a 30-minute sitcom, like multicam. I think it had a laugh track, actually.
Oh my god, it was a multicam sitcom?
Yeah.
I had no idea because I just, yeah, like I said.
Maybe
I just,
there wasn't whatever. A laugh track, but that was definitely how it looked. And it was like 30 minutes long. I'm pretty sure. But
that's bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess don't hold your breath waiting for us to cover that one then. But anyways, let's get into it. We just looked at A League of Their Own with fresh eyes, so let's see how it holds up. So we start with an elderly, widowed Dottie Hinson, who is being pushed out the door by her daughter to attend the opening of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League exhibit at the Baseball Hall of Fame. That name is way too long, by the way. Like, even abbreviated, it's a mouthful. The AAGPBLTWYBGDMSMOGBLTPBNJ. But so I remember the first time I saw this thinking it had to be Gina Davis in old age makeup, you know, but no, it looks too natural to be makeup. So they just hired an actress who did this dead on impersonation of her. But now as a grown man, it's super obvious that Gina Davis just dubbed over all of the dialogue to the point where it's almost kind of distracting.
It's creepy. I forgot that. And I thought it was creepy. Yeah. It's like, just let her be an old lady. I don't know. Your voice ages, right? You age.
I think they do the same thing with Kit as well. She gets overdubbed too, but none of the other women from the team, none of them are overdubbed, which just makes the fact that their voices have changed stick out even more. Like, some of them get away with it. Like, if Doris having a little bit more of a smoker's voice, that's fine. You know, I buy that Doris mm-hmm. still sounds like that as an old woman. But yeah, it's just – it. Why just those two and fuck you others? I don't know. But so – and well, the actress that plays – the older Dottie and the older Kit especially are pretty like they really look like.
Yeah.
Those. I mean, like, that must have been haunting for Lori Petty. Here's you in 50 years. Dead on. So Dottie gets to the field, sees a lot of her former teammates and we're whisked away back to 1943. And I don't know if you guys noticed this, but I'm pretty sure that the voice of the newscaster in that first newsreel sequence is Harry Shearer from The Simpsons and the Christopher Guest movies. So, yeah, to me, it just sounds like Kent Brockman reading the headlines in 1943. And so,
yeah,
it's World War II is threatening to shut down baseball because a lot of the players are joining the service. They're heading overseas. But Candy Bar King Walter Harvey creates a women's league to keep baseball going. And he puts this guy, Ira Lowenstein, in charge of running it. And just in case it isn't super obvious, Harvey is a stand-in for Philip Wrigley of Wrigley Chewing Gum fame, who was one of the founders of the actual league. And Harvey Field is clearly modeled after Wrigley Field. So
it is Wrigley Field.
And Harvey is played by Gary Marshall, who is Penny Marshall's brother. She directed this movie. I think it's like her fourth movie. And her daughter actually is Betty Spaghetti, as a matter of fact. So there's that.
Really?
God bless Penny Marshall.
So they send this guy, Ernie Cappadino, out to scout for players. He's played by John Lovitz, who is definitely one of the best parts of this movie for me.
Oh, he's so good in this.
What's crazy is that, so I think originally Ernie had a lot more screen time. There was a ton of stuff cut from this movie, some of which we'll get into a little bit later. But apparently he was initially a more rounded character, but they cut out everything except his most biting insults and more sarcastic moments. And so he's left with only a few minutes of screen time. But man, he just makes like a monstrous impression. He's another one where like every other line is just like laugh out loud hysterical.
I think he's also, his character is also the one that's, for me, most rewarding to see at the end.
Oh, sure.
Like when he puts the cigar in his mouth. I'm like, oh, yeah, there he is. There he is, everyone.
I was not kidding. When I was a little kid, I was super bummed out that, like, I spent the whole movie thinking, like, oh, what's Jimmy going to be like in the present day? What's Dottie going to say when she sees Jimmy again? It's like, he's fucking dead. I was so upset.
I also, John Lovitz introduced me to the term pickle tickle.
Oh, that was the other thing I was going to mention is that, so every other time I've seen this, I you're like, haha, pickle tickle. This was the only time that for a minute I went, wait, that makes it sound like his wife has a dick. But I think what he's saying is he's gonna tickle her with his dick from the inside is what he's saying.
Yeah, no, everyone else on Earth got that one.
Let me introduce you to a brand new segment, Graphic Translations of Super Obvious Insinuations with Chris. Pickle tickle.
See, the pickle is his ding dong, and by ding dong I mean penis.
I gotta pad out the running time somehow. So where the hell are we at here? Yeah, so he's at a softball game in rural Oregon. This is where we meet Dottie and her little sister Kit. Dottie is more athletic, more attractive, more popular, more everything. And I don't know if I want to open this can of worms already. I imagine this is something I might keep touching on as we go. But I mean, seriously, one of my only issues with this movie, and I can already feel you guys about to disagree with me, is Kit. Because I like this relationship. I like the actresses a whole lot. Lori Petty actually has like an amazing scene during the big game at the end. So nothing against the performances. My issue is just that Kit is so aware of the situation and people's perceptions right from the word go that she just whines like a brat for the entire movie. And as a kid, I never felt sorry for her, and she never felt like the hero of this movie to me, even though she probably should be, because when you really look at the big picture here, it's sort of Kit's story, or she at the very least has the most dramatic change and an interesting journey. But the problem is that the filmmakers are guilty of the same thing that everyone else in the movie is, and that's that they're more interested in Dottie. And that would be okay, too, if Dottie weren't as perfect as Kit accuses her of being, because Geena Davis is great, but Dottie's only real flaw is that she's just too darn good at everything, and I don't think that's super interesting. And one thing that actually really stuck out to me this time is that once Kit gets traded to Racine later on, we never see her again until the last game. And that's a pretty big missed opportunity, right? Because, like, you know, we see what Dottie's going through, but it can't be anywhere near as agonizing as what Kit is. And because we stay entirely on the Peaches, I think, like, so by the time we do see Kit again, we don't want her to win because that means the Peaches lose. Like, no one's rooting for her in that final game. And so for me, it really whiffs, like, what should be the emotional center of the story. Because if it's a story about these two sisters, which it's obviously intended to be, then their relationship should change over the course of the film, not coast along with exactly the same dynamic until their second to last scene together. Like, I still love the movie, don't get me wrong. I think it still works for the most part. This is just, like, maybe the one aspect that makes it a 4-star rating on Netflix instead of 5. I don't know. Thaw, what do you guys think?
That's very interesting. I never really thought about it. Because I think, even though I'm an only child, for some reason that Kit, I could always really identify with Kit.
I'm so happy you said that. This is like, I was going to bring this up specifically in regards to you much, much later on, but go ahead.
Okay. I really liked Kit. I mean, I wasn't good at sports and I was messy and clumsy and I was not married when I was 10 years old. So, I just wanted to get off of that farm.
You weren't a child bride? Okay, that's good.
No.
That's good to know.
No, I know you guys thought, but no, I was lying before when I said I was. No, I love Kit. And, but it is interesting because, yeah, when I watched it this time, I was sort of waiting for that little sneak into Dottie's imperfections. Like, yeah. I want to see it as an audience member. I want to see, like, what she's actually not good at, or is she so good at, like, hiding what she's not good at that it just never ever comes up because she'll never do it again. and yeah, at the end, I do root for Kit because I'm just with her, but it's hard rooting against the Peaches because Peaches.
And I think, but that's, I mean, that also is very interesting. Like that, so I can appreciate like that point of view. I mean, because see, I was the oldest. I had two sisters, but like, yeah, I can see how as an only child or as maybe if you were the youngest of being able to identify with Kit just strictly because like, oh, this is that. That's speaking to me because I understand this. I understand that relationship. So I don't, what I have an issue with is really just like the huge missed opportunity because even what you're describing, like imagine being at that final game and being truly conflicted over like, oh, they can't both win. Cause I think that's probably what they're going for, but I don't get that. Like as a kid, I really strongly felt like, Kit is a brat. I don't want her to win. Whereas, but I do think maybe the better version of the movie is the one that where there are no ifs, ands, or buts that Kit is our protagonist. And it's so strange that like the movie, because it, like, you know, again, so much was cut out. I don't know all of the material that is missing. I know some of it. And I wonder as they're shaping the movie in editing, if there were any places where what they're putting together for the finished product don't totally line up with the movie that they actually shot. And there's some stuff with Dottie that's going to come up later where I think that's absolutely true, where they had to rejigger a few things. But like, it's so strange that the story that they set up you're going like, oh, so Kit is our in. Kit is the character that we, you know, like this is her story. But the movie, the way it's edited, keeps trying to tell you, no, Dottie's the star. Dottie's the main character. Dottie's the one we're rooting for. And it just, it seems so, I don't know. The movie's got to pick one or the other. Because in this version, Dottie to me feels more like a side character. It doesn't feel like she should be the focus of the story. Like, Kit is Luke Skywalker, Dottie is Han Solo. Like, it doesn't feel like this is Dottie's show, even though ultimately it kind of is.
Yeah.
Well, I've been watching a lot of Frozen lately, and so watching this was just like, yes, it's a movie about sisters. Like, it's that relationship, which is so strained and so difficult, but so worthwhile. And I love that it's about that female relationship and how hard it is. I do think it would be great to be able to see, the flaw in Dottie and also to see Kit kind of change. But I think watching it just recently was like, she is so deep in a hole of lack of self-confidence and just being in this constant shadow that I don't know how you can get there in the like 1 to 2 scenes that would have been possible.
Well, I wasn't looking for her to become more confident when I'm talking, like maybe because I agree with you. I think in order for this, I love that this is not a love story. It's not any of that bullshit. It's two sisters. Like I like that as well. And I think, what it's missing though is, Dottie needs a couple of flaws and Kit needs to just not be all flaws all the time. Like it needs to be a little bit more balanced. And so what I would say is not to have Kit's journey be like start out where she is now and then grow into a stronger, more confident person. What I was sort of thinking was maybe something more along the lines of like what I said about her being too aware of all of this right up front. Maybe starting off quieter and more reserved and not so resentful of Dottie right away. And then as they get to the tryouts and then they get into the league and then they're playing games and Dottie sort of becomes the star of the league. And it's like, it just keeps piling on and on for her until she gets to a point where she's in that last game and she's just wrecked. Like she's always in her big sister's shadow. So sort of like, yeah, instead of gradually getting stronger, actually more along the lines of gradually getting worn down up until we get to that final game. Yeah. Just so there's some progression to it. Because, I mean, just not much changes between them. Like, we know the argument they're going to have before they have it because it's the same one they have throughout the entire movie.
Yeah. I think that Kit's got the best moment in the movie when the "then why are you still here" line.
Yeah,
I think that's probably the best, like, dramatic moment. And I think that the movie starts off being about Kit and Dottie's kind of sibling rivalry, although it's really one-sided. And it ends up being how Kit reminded Dottie that she loves baseball. And that's, at least that's what it feels like to me. Like, Dottie was always very nonchalant about it. Like, she could take or leave the league. But when Kit says, "then why are you still here?" It starts to ask that question, like, yeah, Dottie, why are you still here? It's because you love this. Like, don't pretend any different. And I think that the movie makes that decision as well. And as far as the, you know, following Kit after she gets traded, yeah, that would be, there were probably at least a montage that could have been thrown in there.
I mean, there were certainly, there's like 200 others already.
Exactly.
So one
but,
more.
Yeah. This movie also is probably the first, it's definitely the first I can think of off the top of my head where the ending wasn't, or at least the ending of the big game didn't go the way that it was quote unquote supposed to. You know, because like for me, you know, the Mighty Ducks always win, spoiler alert, and Teen Wolf wins at the end of the game. But for this movie, Dottie, who is, you know, the star of the movie because the movie chose her to be the star of it, loses. And I, you know, as a kid, I remember having to deal with that, you know, and having to reckon with the idea of like, oh, well, then then why did they tell me this story if she loses? But then, you know, it, yeah, so then, but I, you know, I probably did some growing up just having to come to terms with the idea that, you know, losing the game might have also won her back her sister, you know, and saved their, so not that she threw the game, but, you know, just the idea that
there, well, but even that, I think
every transaction
that, but that could have been interesting, something like that. I'm not saying they should have, but I mean, that it was something I thought about this time too. It's like, because what you said about Dottie being so nonchalant, I could take it or leave it or whatever. I mean, that's sort of another one of the problems I have with being able to like fully invest in her as a character is like, what does Dottie want? Like, what is she doing here? What is the conflict with her? And there really isn't so much of one. There's a lot of lip service paid to like, the family that she wants to start with Bob and da da da. But it's not like at that, you know, for most of the movie, there's no conflict there because she can't do any of that stuff because he's off fighting the war. So it's not like baseball is keeping her from living the life she really wants to live. Circumstances have already taken care of that for her. And also, like, you know, the fact that the Peaches lose, I mean, regardless of like, if the movie's trying to tell us that, well, now Dottie loves baseball again, because and Jimmy keeps, every time Jimmy says that to her, like, you know, it's, oh, it's in your blood and you love this. I don't feel it the way, I don't see what Jimmy's seeing, quite frankly. And it's, so the whole losing thing, to me, it doesn't feel like Dottie has lost all that much in that moment. Like, she's going to be fine. And that's okay. And the idea that like losing this game gets her sister back, I love that. I think that's great. And that's why I almost wish that the moment where the ball rolls out of her hand, if there was just a degree or two more of ambiguity of like, wait a minute, we've seen Dottie, like, what, there is a close up earlier on in the movie of like, you know, somebody rams into Dottie and she holds that ball. And like, it just a moment where you go, did she, so that Kit could da 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 da, and like she, but then that sort of undermines that Kit won for herself. So I understand that's why that's not in there. But,
I always thought Dottie let go for Kit.
Really?
Always.
This time it seemed pretty always clear to me that she doesn't, because that would mean it was just Dottie doing her a favor again, that Kit still couldn't beat Dottie.
I mean, I think she thought about it a lot in that, like, split second, but I always thought she let go.
That's interesting. I've never, mm-hmm. It has never dawned on me that she lets go of that ball on purpose. I just always thought that she lost a game to her sister, and she lost it fair and square, and that's awesome. And she's good with it, as much as it's, you know, as much as she hates to lose. Because the thing is, yeah, I don't necessarily believe that she's like, you know, every day she's you know, sleeping and breathing and eating baseball all day. But she, I think that what Geena Davis played really well was the competitive streak that's just kind of inherent in her character.
Yeah.
Like, you can tell she hates to lose, and you can tell that she doesn't like when she's instructing the pitchers how to throw to Kit, because, you know, she knows Kit can't lay off, you know.
That's how, and that to me is why I thought this time, because that was another important moment for me too, as I was like, as we were winding down and I knew this moment was coming where Kit slams into her and the Racine wins, I thought, like, because in my memory I was sort of like, is it ambiguous? Do they actually do what I'm sort of hoping for here? And then when she says to Ellen Sue, like, here's how you want to pitch, like, I'm like, oh no, she's trying to win. She's like exploiting Kit's weakness right here.
I think that she couldn't do that to, you know, her teammates and her sister and herself. She couldn't not try to win that game, because that is what I think is in her, is that she is a competitor who happens to be amazing at baseball. Like, if she was great at basketball, she would have been a basketball player, but she's great at baseball and she loves to win. But she's okay with losing if she loses, you know, if it happened fair and square, I think, personally. Okay. It's funny. It's never dawned on me that she dropped that ball, on purpose. I always made that decision in my head as a kid, like, no, she got rocked and she lost the ball.
So I guess the way I would see it is that, is yes, she's very competitive, and yes, she wants to do everything she can to win. And she's like, this is throw 'em high. She can't lay off. It's totally going to get her. But when Kit actually hits that ball so hard and isn't afraid, they tell her to stop at third, and she's like not afraid at all, and she's just runs right at her. I think in those moments, Dottie recognizes Kit as has already won. Like, do you see what I'm saying?
Like, I like that,
that she's already beaten those odds, that she's already not afraid, that she comes right at her, and she's like, it's yours.
But if Dottie deliberately, if she lets Kit win, don't you? Do you see how that sort of undermines what Kit has just accomplished? Like, if it's still just, you still needed your big sister to bail you out, like that, you still needed Dottie to surrender the win in order to.
Yeah, but she never tells anybody.
But it does. No, but it, but we, but for,
that's
but
true.
It's,
bring it up.
No, but it, but it's important because we as, if that's how we as the audience are meant to read that moment, it undermines Kit's story for us. And it kind of, it makes the ending not feel earned or right. Like, you're living a lie, Kit. I don't know.
It could also be, I mean, if I'm reading Donna's reading of it, which I actually really like, in getting bowled over by her sister in that moment, we're watching Dottie give up on baseball. Like, just say, okay, I'm done. Like, that this is not like, I'm going to let Kit win. Just being like, this is the last moment I'm going to experience on a baseball field. Like, my sister beating me. And just kind of like, there's kind of like, yeah, like just kind of letting go. Like, just not, yeah, like separating that from like letting her sister win. Just like letting go of that life, basically.
So
yeah.
I guess if that was something that the movie and like Penny Marshall as a director was making me clear of, like, I would be okay with that, but just based on the way Dottie is handled throughout the rest of the movie and the circumstances that lead to her showing up again for this last game, like, I just don't, I like that too. I just really don't think that's, I have a hard time accepting that's what the movie is trying to say in that moment. It's a great scene that's not really supported by the movie around it though.
Yeah. Well, I like the, well, now that we're kind of committed to jumping around, the part right after that when Rosie O'Donnell just kind of looks like, that's it? We lost? Like, because that's how I felt as a kid. Like, are you serious? They lost that game?
I think I saw Rocky before I saw this, so I was accustomed to, like, what the fuck did I just sit through this for? And, like, too young to appreciate, like, no, he won something else. It's okay. Like, just not getting it. Like, hey, what the fuck?
Yeah, every sports movie I had seen to this point was – every sports movie I had seen to this point was, like I said, Mighty Ducks, Teen Wolf. You know, where you're following the underdog and he wins the big game. This one, Dottie is not the underdog. No. She's the best player in baseball.
Yeah, I wished this was maybe the first time I watched this. And I want to say that, like, so I this did not hinder my enjoyment of the movie. I still love it. I think maybe I was just watching it slightly differently this time because I knew we were doing it for the show, and maybe just thinking about it a little more critically than usual. And maybe that's why it really stuck out to me this time that, like, really Dottie's dilemma is that just, like, oh, God, I just can't stop being good at stuff. And fuck, I don't know. It's like, what a burden.
I think Dottie's struggle in this movie should have been that she's keeping up appearances on the outside. And when she's by herself, she's losing it because her husband's overseas. You know, like she doesn't know what's going on with him, you know, day to day. And, you know, her sister is kind of nagging her and, you know, having, you know, she's gotten getting into fights with her sister left and right. And just this idea that she can't hold it together would have been nice. Like, the moment when she's in her room by herself and she's crying because she's scared that her husband might be dead.
Right.
That would have been awesome. Had her husband not shown up immediately after that.
Right.
Like, we needed to see her character have a break at some point. Mm-hmm. And we don't ever get that because she's rescued by the idea, you know, the fact that her husband just happens to be there at the moment that she's having this crisis.
Yeah. Well, that was the other thing I noticed about the movie this time, too, is how many of these, you know, characters kind of come into the movie very suddenly. They exit the movie very suddenly. And then you get like the Penny Marshall seems to like the big emotional payoff scenes and doesn't necessarily always do the groundwork to get there.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's so consistent, though, that it just sort of becomes like the style of storytelling here. So, you know, The Sandlot was very similar, but my problem with The Sandlot was there was no overarching story. There was no emotional through line. And this movie does have one. So it didn't bother me as much. But like, I agree with that. And I also think that I don't really have a problem with the way they portray Dottie here. My issue then is just if that's the character, well, then she shouldn't be our main character. This should be Kit's story, not Dottie's. Like, you can still have Dottie being Dottie for all the reasons Donna, you know, explained. But then let's focus on Kit, because that becomes the more interesting character.
You can kind of, though, see that it would have been really difficult to get that second storyline of Kit going to her new team.
I don't mean an entire storyline. Like, I don't mean that at all.
You need something there, like, you know.
I mean, maybe one scene of, like, the first time she's in the locker room and they're all, you know, everyone else is in there and they're talking and, like, they've got a shorthand with each other. They're telling inside jokes. And I mean, just, like, just something.
Yeah. And you don't need the first time you see her on the new team being her freaking out, like having a nervous breakdown while one of her teammates is like, come on, kid, what's your problem? And she's like holding her head like, oh my God, I'm weirding out, guys.
Lori Petty is so good in that scene.
She is.
It's so just kind of, okay. So now that we've covered the end of the movie, no, it's fine. I liked it. That was great. I'm going to jump back into when Ernie is offering Dottie a chance to try out for the league. She's not interested. Ernie doesn't want Kit, but says if she can convince Dottie to come, she can too. And so the scene in the kitchen right after this, where Kit's trying to talk Dottie into this, Dottie says, I'm married. I'm happy. That's what I want. Let's not confuse things. Now, does this strike either of you as a particularly memorable or amusing line? No, right?
No.
Like, you probably forgot it was in there. Well, for some reason, my stepdad would walk around the house saying this and then, like, laugh to himself.
Oh, wow.
And I never understood what was happening there. He'd say it to the dog. It was really weird.
That is weird.
Just something about that line. Yeah. So, anyway, they have to make one stop before heading to Chicago. That's to check out Marla Hooch. She's this incredible switch hitter that Ernie is not interested in because she's a bit mannish. And her dad is played by Eddie Jones. He's another one of these actors who, like, whenever he turns up in something, it's just it's Marla's dad. He's Marla's dad to me forever. And, like, he played Jonathan Kent on Lois and Clark, and it was like, oh, so Superman and Marla, they're brother and sister. But no wonder she hits so well.
That's why she's so good. What a hitter.
But, yeah, so Dottie and Kit won't go without Marla, so Eddie relents. He is just Cappadino is just a mountain of compromises on his way to get Dottie to Chicago. So
this is the part, though, where he's like, no, you see, the train is the one that moves.
Oh, so good. The way it works is so they get to Chicago. Lovitz pieces out of the movie, whole pickle tickle situation. And this is where we meet the other women that will go on to be in the league. Mostly we focus on the ones that are going to become the Georgia Peaches. There's May Mortobito, played by Madonna.
The Georgia Peaches?
Or, oh my God, Rockford Peach. Peaches. They do have peaches in Georgia.
Georgia Peaches are like Idaho potatoes. Like, that's kind of what they're known for. Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, yeah. So it came from somewhere. Good, good. I wasn't so the Pennsylvania Peaches.
And California Raisins.
So, yeah, May Mortobito, played by Madonna. Well, I don't know if you guys read anything or were aware that apparently she had an awful time making this movie. Do you know about the letter she wrote to her friend during filming?
No.
Okay.
It sounds familiar, but I'm not.
I've got the transcript here.
Oh, God.
So this comes from a Huffington Post article titled Madonna Hates Chicago. She wrote this in 1991 while they were making the movie. It was to a photographer named Stephen Meisel, I don't know. But this is what it says. This is the relevant part of the letter. I cannot suffer any more than I have in the past month learning how to play baseball with a bunch of girls, yuck, in Chicago, double yuck. I have a tan, I am dirty all day, and I hardly ever wear makeup. Penny Marshall is Laverne, Gina Davis is a Barbie doll, and when God decided where the beautiful men were going to live in the world, he did not choose Chicago. I have made a few friends, but they are athletes, not actresses. I hate actresses. They have nothing on the house of extravaganza. I wish I could come to New York and visit.
Didn't she come out of this being, like, really good friends with Rosie O'Donnell, though?
I know that Penny Marshall and Rosie O'Donnell would seem to, like, they always popped up together after this. Well, so we also meet Evelyn Gardner, who later brings her kid Stillwell on the road with them. Shirley Baker, who won't really be of much importance after this scene where we realize she can't read. And then former Miss Georgia, Ellen Sue. I bet I saw the word Georgia in my notes, and that's where.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
This is maybe the first time I noticed, maybe I just forgotten, there are only four teams in this league.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah. What an action-packed season.
I love that. Yeah, there's like a moment where they're like, hey, we got to make it to the playoffs. And I was like, wait, aren't you all in the playoffs? If there's only four teams, what would a
what
playoff
team didn't
even
make the
be?
Playoffs?
Your first game, aren't you in the playoffs, I think? Like, this is, there's nowhere to go but
this.
Up.
We're here. That's fucking this.
So they're all introduced to the uniforms they're going to be wearing. And these are about 80% accurate. The skirts weren't actually this short. And in general, they were a little less form-fitting than the way they appear here. But I do like the reaction that this gets from everybody. And then there's after this, the girls have to go to charm and beauty school. This was also a real thing. And this is where I first recognized that Taya Leone is in this movie when she was a brunette. She's the first, she plays first base for Racine. All right. Well, so now they've got their players, but the Peaches need a manager. Harvey offers the job to former Chicago Cub, Jimmy Dugan. I can't imagine anyone not liking Tom Hanks in this. And what I really love about it is that even by the time they've redeemed his character, he's still Jimmy. Like, he's still sort of a slob and a jerk. He's just not as bad as he was before. And I think it's a credit to Tom Hanks that he's not totally repulsive before that switch happens. Like, he's still so entertaining and fun to watch, you know, before that. The first big game, there is not a great turnout for this game. And this is one of the things they actually fictionalized for the movie. The idea that the league didn't get more popular until they started playing up the sexuality and introducing more gimmicky stuff. The reality is that, it was very successful right out of the gate.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And what killed it was actually the introduction of televised baseball games in the early 50s. And because then you could just stay home and watch your baseball. But at the time this league was created, like especially like here in the Midwest, if you wanted to see baseball, this was the only way it was happening. So, yeah, it was very, very successful. The other thing about this first game is that Jimmy sleeps through the whole thing. He still gets credit for being a master strategist, even though Dottie's really the one running the game. When Ira reprimands him afterwards and mentions that he scratched his balls for half an inning and Jimmy says, well, yeah, anything worth doing is worth doing right. That is something I actually say a lot. It's like it's the attitude I have towards a lot of things in my life. And yet I have to recognize that the first time I heard it was in reference to Tom Hanks's balls. So the Peaches hit the road. Those Georgia Peaches hit the road. Stillwell drives everyone crazy. The driver quits. I think this is the first scene with the team's chaperone, Miss Cuthbert. When the driver throws the dirt in her face, it seems so unnecessary.
It is. So unnecessary.
We should all try and end more conversations that way, though.
Well, she wasn't letting him go. She was just not going to stop. So he had to insult her in some way.
I guess. I love the way it's shot, too, where they're all the way down the road and you just barely hear that, like, it's just so good. And so after that, May poisons Miss Cuthbert's dinner so the girls can sneak off to a roadhouse called the Suds Bucket. And holy shit, this is a fun scene. I've always really, really loved this part of the movie, especially if you're into unflattering undergarments. And who isn't? Well, the fun is short-lived because Ira's on the way and they're forbidden from drinking and smoking and all that shit. So Dottie rushes over to warn everyone what's going on and, you know, to get them out of there.
But Marla, that's where Marla meets
Nelson. Yeah.
Nelson.
Serenades. I'm singing to Nelson.
Yeah.
Ain't I, baby?
Ain't I,
you
baby?
Sure are.
And the dudes in the band are just like, this sounds so bad. Some others I've seen.
I think, okay, so then the next game is. That's where Jimmy sees Dottie giving hand signals to Marla when she's at the plate. This must have been in all the trailers and all the clips like from this movie, because this was probably the scene I was most aware of before I actually saw the film, was Tom Hanks and Gina Davis standing next to each other with dueling blibbity-blobbity motions. And I was kind of obsessed with this. Like, my sister and I used to imitate this. Like, just nonsense, of course. We didn't know what we were doing. But this is a nice moment because it's the first time we see Jimmy having any sort of investment in the game. I have in my notes the next scene is – this is where May is teaching Shirley how to read, which we talked about already. Is this also the scene where Doris shows Betty and Evelyn the picture of her boyfriend or husband or whoever? Okay. So what I love about this is that – okay, so Betty goes – oh, is the picture out of focus? And Doris says, like, no, that's just the way he looks. Betty could have just fucked off right there and saved face, but completely unprovoked, she goes, well, hey, looks aren't everything. Can you imagine if someone said this to you when you showed them a picture of your significant other?
Amazing. Yeah.
Try this. I mean, see if anyone reacts the way Doris does here. Or better yet, here's what you do. Try it with someone's bullshit baby pictures. Do this the next time someone floods your Facebook feed with pictures of their kid. Just comment, oh, well, looks aren't everything. Smiley face with tongue sticking out.
I am not.
Yeah, I'm having a kid in like 5 or 6 weeks. I'll kill you both.
Well, you'll get it. Amanda will be like, fuck this kid so hard. You're not doing
Amanda
that podcast anymore.
Yeah, exactly. We just said it at the same time.
Okay, so there's no crying in baseball, as we learn in the next scene.
That's become like a colloquialism for America. Like, everyone says that.
It is. You know? Yeah. Which actually, the line before, I think I like better when he gets in her face and he's like, what is this? What are you crying? what is this? Like, that, the lash out about crying, the, like, way he gets into it with her is one of my favorite things. And every time I see someone cry at work, which is so inappropriate and drives me fucking crazy and somehow happens all the time, I always am like, what is this? What are you crying?
What if they had just seen A League of Their Own and were trying to keep it together?
Yeah, what if?
God, Donna. You of all people.
See, I like the line right after that where he's explaining it to the ump. He's like, treat these women like you would treat your mother. And he's like, you know, you look like a little penis with a hat on.
Yeah, it's amazing. So now that we're all just quoting lines from the movie, I have to say my favorite part of this scene is when he first digs into her and he's like, you know, what team do you play for? She's like, what? What team do you play? Well, I'm a peach. I love the way she says, well, I'm a peach. And he goes, well, I was just wondering. I love that.
And he has that way of like yelling with like one eye squinted. Yeah. Like, oh, he's so good in this.
Well, I was just wondering.
But you're right, her delivery. Well, I'm a peach.
Yeah. It's amazing. So there's this montage of all the various ways that the league is trying to drum up business. That's kicked off by Dottie catching the fly ball, doing the splits. And during all of this, we're seeing Jimmy's becoming more and more involved with the team. And this is where the first time we see the two guys that are in love with Doris, her little fan club.
Ugh.
Okay, so the guy, the one with the curly hair, that guy was in our Starbucks one morning.
I was going to bring that up. Joey Slotnick.
What?
Yeah. We totally made him coffee. And
okay, well, he must have been
like
in there.
An hour.
Well, I think what happened was he was in a show at Victory Gardens down the street.
Yeah.
And so he was in there several mornings. Because the one I'm thinking of, that was the first time I saw him, and it was, I'm pretty sure it was Brian and I that were there. And so what happened, or maybe you were, maybe this will sound familiar to you. So like, so he was there, he, you know, reading the paper, kind of was giving off a vibe that he just wanted to be left alone. And this woman came in and really loud, she goes, she says, I'm working the register. She says to me, "Is that actor?" And I felt really bad because, again, clearly this guy just wants to sort of do his own thing. So I just sort of smiled and nodded like, yeah. And then she yells to another customer standing at the bar waiting for her drink, "It's Paul Giamatti."
Spoiler alert. Yes, yes.
It's not Paul Giamatti.
Not Paul Giamatti. Joey Slotnick. That was right after Sideways came out. So Paul Giamatti was everywhere.
He was Oscar nominated at the time.
And Joey Slotnick does look a little like him.
I think, I don't know that I would ever have made, I mean, I wouldn't have made the mistake, but then maybe after she said it, sort of like, yeah, I guess if I squint, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was a jerk, that woman.
Yeah. What an asshole. So, the other moment in this montage worth mentioning is when the black woman picks up the ball, throws it to Dottie.
Oh, yeah.
And there's just that silent understanding that she should be playing ball, too.
Yeah.
And this is interesting because when we covered The Sandlot, we realized that they just pretended this sort of thing wasn't happening.
Yes. Yeah.
It's not even just that they ignored it. They, like, blatantly defied what was probably going on
no
at the time.
No racism. No problem at all.
Look at all this harmony. So
I think we explained it away by the fact that they were in California, which was probably more progressive.
I think Three Moons. Even then, I think it was the Three Moons.
Well,
yeah,
there
right. There
three
were Three
Moons.
Moons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the 60s before they merged.
Oh, yeah. So, but I did. I liked that this movie paused for just a second to at least acknowledge this. And like,
yeah,
it's one isolated moment. It only lasts a few seconds, but that's sort of the case with a lot of stuff. And
the montage music even stops to get like, sentimental.
Yeah, the music changes.
Yeah.
It was really well done. Very good nod to racism, Penny Marshall.
Great nod to racism.
That's a Donna's quote on the cover. Great nod to racism, Donna Ray.
I always felt that would have been a really interesting movie, like a women's Negro League baseball.
Yeah.
Would have been a really interesting movie. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if it never happened, it's kind of hard to make that film.
Well, yeah. And that, to me, that would be, if you were ever going to spin off, like, what are those women doing? What would they rather be doing? Like, these are clearly, they're talented women in all kinds of walks of life and races. And, you know, it doesn't make a difference. You're talented, but you don't get a chance to do that. So how do you feel about it? How do you, do you deal with it? What do you do? Do you go around and, like, throw the baseball around with your friends? Like, maybe. I like games.
Yeah, I don't know that I would go to the games, but
no,
it was a different time.
Yeah, maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah.
Sort of interesting, though.
Well, sort of.
Well, just passingly.
It's almost poetic. Almost.
Well, the other big thing that happens with the montage is that it ends with Marla getting married to Nelson. And this was the other thing that struck me this time. I mentioned earlier just how abruptly characters are coming in and out of the film, and how many plot points I remembered being this huge deal that kind of just come out of nowhere for one scene. What are we at here? Here. So now we get the scene of Jimmy and Dottie on the bus where they sort of bond a little bit. She's talking about her husband. He's talking about, the cartilage in his knee. That's why he couldn't go to war. And my issue you know, with Dottie not being a particularly engaging protagonist, well, here's something sort of fascinating. So I guess one of the other major things that was cut involved her and Jimmy developing feelings for each other. Nothing overt. Ooh. There was no affair or anything like that. It was just the recognition that these feelings were there and starting to manifest. And that's why she takes off in such a hurry once Bob shows up. Because that always did feel a little awkward to me. Like, I never really understood what Dottie's deal was. Like, why was she so conflicted over playing ball, I mean? And, you know, again, they mention the going home, starting a family. But to stop right before the World Series and immediately start squeezing out kids, like, what, Bob can't wait seven fucking games?
Right?
So, so that whole – that subplot sort of sheds some light on that.
I've always admired that they didn't have that relationship, that those – like, it was always kind of like a mentor-mentee relationship that didn't get – anything beyond that. But I mean, it certainly makes a lot more sense why she would leave so quickly. 'Cause you know, she felt like she was succumbing to the charms of one Tom Hanks.
To me, it goes back to that line that my stepdad liked an awful lot, which was, you know, I'm married. I'm happy. It's what I want. Let's not confuse things. Like, let's not make things complicated. And then she goes just to play ball and oh shit, suddenly things are very complicated. And now it's like, yeah, you can't have that life you want with this guy. Like, that's not going to happen. Are you really going to put everything in jeopardy over this? Like, I kind of, like, I don't think they should have, like, gone for it or anything. Like, I certainly wouldn't have wanted them to get together or whatever. But yeah, let's put it like a crack in Dottie's, like, you know, just this facade of this perfect life for just a little bit, just something to actually grapple with here.
Yeah, I mean, you could do it with just a look or two, like an extra long look here or there.
One blowjob. One.
wouldn't if I may, wouldn't the more, like, maybe the more interesting story be she goes from, you know, the I'm married, I'm happy, let's not confuse things, to now she can't be happy with that because now she's been a star. If she was like, you know, if her husband comes back and now she's got a, like, well, I don't want to go back home. Like, I want to do this. Like, I think that might have been more interesting than, I don't know, I feel like it.
That, no, yeah, and I can actually.
Cliched that she and Tom Hanks and Jimmy Dugan would have, like, feelings for each other.
I can, yeah, that would work well. And that also would work really well with the ending then where, you know, she's got that conflict about, like, but I think I want to stay and do this. I'm not sure I want that anymore. Then getting to that last game and being like, no, this is Kit's thing. I'm going to let Kit have this. Mm-hmm. And then you, that last game sort of being like a really nice way to, like, combine the A plot line and the B plot line where it all sort of comes together. And that last game is all about, like, her sort of realizing, like, okay, I am okay without this. Like,
right.
Yeah, that would be great.
See?
Well, that's not what happened.
I'm going to go write that now. See you later, suckers. A League of Their Own 2. Lost in New York.
So Dottie's tenuous relationship with Kit really explodes when, like, Kit is pitching a pretty poor game. Jimmy wants to take her out. He lets Dottie make the call. She agrees. Kit's done. This is also the same scene where we get my favorite line about winning the war and Harvey telling Ira that they're not going to need these girls next year. And so Dottie wants to leave. Ira realizes this is a super critical time for the league. He convinces her to stay by offering to trade her to another team. Again, the whole Jimmy subplot really would have sold this moment too. It still works, but that definitely would have added to the urgency to get out of this situation. Only Dottie doesn't get traded. Kit does. And when they start fighting, and I think it's Helen that interrupts them, and, like, so with one of this, the line delivery here. So my roommate in college got into a really bad fight with his girlfriend, and they were in the living room. I had to leave, so I had to pass through there to get to the front door. And I was, like, waiting and waiting and waiting. I'm like, I'm going to be so fucking late. I have to get out of this room. And it was going to be so awkward. So I just I opened the door and I walked in going, has anyone seen my new red hat? Because neither of them got the reference.
Did any of them say, piss on your hat?
That's what I was waiting for. Just break the tension, but nothing. No, no. So I just awkwardly walked out the door. Okay, and so then we get our big scene with the telegram from the War Department. Oh, poor Boopy. Or Betty. Poor
Boopy. Oh, Boopy.
Poor Boopy Skadoopy.
Her teammates call her Boopy Skadoopy. Oh, she joins the Hey, Do You Remember Hall of Fame with Princess Derpy.
And Uncle Moonrise.
and Uncle Moonrise.
Yeah. This delivery guy is so cartoonishly tactless. Just like,
he is.
These are the worst ones. Sorry.
Ain't giving these out.
Yeah, lost the name. Long story short, one of y'all bitches' husbands is dead. See ya. But yeah, it's Boopy Skadoopy's husband. And I remember watching this with my sisters. Wasn't even the first time we'd seen it. This was like one of the like subsequent viewings. And they are bawling at this part. And one of them looks at me and my eyes are dry. And she goes, what's wrong with you? And I was like, what? And she's like, don't you feel anything? And I started laughing. I was like, what the hell? I've seen this before. And she's like, you know, something along the lines of like, her husband died. Don't you care? And this is maybe the only time in my life I've ever said this, but I went, it's just a movie.
What?
And then my other sister jumps in and goes, oh, so what? Nobody ever lost a husband in the war? And I was like, what the fuck is happening right now? Why am I being tag teamed by Weepy McSobfest? Like, I mean, okay, so this scene is heartbreaking. I get it. It is. But now when I watch it, I just laugh because, like, thinking about how utterly bonkers those two were behaving that day. So,
it's also bonkers that Tom Hanks would read the letter, know who it is, and then do the slow walk of death.
Yeah.
Through the room. Like,
what is he going to call
like,
her up
Betty.
To the front of the room, like in class? Betty!
I think he could haul ass a little bit and just not, like, draw the moment out of,
he's
like.
He's not, like, going to be excited to tell someone their husband is dead.
Well, he's not going to. No one's saying he should skip over there and, like, do a cartwheel and do da 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 ta da. He's dead.
I mean, he could have stood there and been like, I'm sorry, Betty, without the walk of death. Mm. So every woman sitting on the bench had to be like, you know, had to do like the sigh of relief when he passes them by, which automatically makes them dicks once Betty Spaghetti is not going to sigh that sigh of relief. Because, like, you see them all relieved, and then but they know someone else down somebody the line else. Is, yeah. you know.
But you know, it's not
widow.
You. Thank God.
I know. Yeah, I'm kind of. I mean, if I don't. I don't. I understand. I think I understand the reason they staged it this way. It's
sure.
Visually, it's very effective. Yeah, very, very dramatic. But, like, in real life, you would hope that it would just, Betty, can I talk to you for a second outside? Or just like.
Yeah, exactly. Also, in real life, there would have been some legal recourse for throwing somebody out from the War Department.
And Jimmy's fucked.
So, yeah, he gets arrested at Game 7 of the World Series.
Yeah. Well, so that's the same night that Dottie's husband, Bill Pullman, shows up out of nowhere. He's been honorably discharged after getting injured in Italy. And so the rest of the Peaches are packing up to go to the World Series, but Dottie decides to take off with him. This is also the moment where Jimmy signs the baseball for the little kids. I don't think I knew what the clap was until I was a little older. So I know for a while I thought he said avoid to clap, like, hey, kid, curb your enthusiasm at this game, all right? Like, no clapping. And I was like, aw, classic Jimmy. And then for a while, I thought maybe he said avoid the crap, also good advice. But no, the clap, which was a thing, a big thing. Mm.
Avoid the clap, Jimmy Dugan.
Good advice.
That's good advice.
And so he sees Dottie leaving and, you know, says all this. She says this stuff was just getting too hard. He says that's what makes it great. He tells her if it wasn't hard, everyone would do it. That's another sentiment I think about a lot. Like, I used to have a variation of that quote hanging above my computer. It was from when I was trying to masturbate left-handed, but still.
Jesus Christ.
No, I'm being totally serious, though. That is, like, that. I really like that quote as well, and it's crazy how many of these long-running motivational sound bites, you know, I evidently took from A League of Their Own.
Yeah.
Montage of World Series games, Peaches against the Bells. It's all tied up. Seventh game to determine the winner. Dottie shows up unexpectedly at the start of game 7. Let the team do all the heavy lifting for the first 6 games. Drop in for all the glory.
They blow through like 12 pitchers in the meantime. When they've like, after they trade Kit, they're like, everyone on the team pitches.
I noticed that.
Ends up pitching. It's like, damn, who are they bringing in alternates? Like, is there anyone on this team anymore?
Well, isn't it predominantly Ellen Sue? Because she's the one that goes in once Kit is done, I think. Isn't she?
Betty was the alternate.
Oh, that's right.
Boopy was the original.
Boopy was the alternate. Mm-hmm. Ellen Sue's the one that winds up pitching this last game in the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When Jimmy throws the glove at Stillwell, no joke, Stillwell's reaction is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Like, no question. They had to really, like, fucking pelt that kid.
Yeah, they did.
I can't figure out any other way that, like, or he's just, like, a brilliant little actor, but oh my God. The range of emotions you see run through his face are incredible.
My wife and I will still quote the, got him, when he knocks him out.
But yeah, so it's the big game. They're playing against Kit. Dottie tells Ellen Sue, use the fastballs. She can't resist them. We've covered the ending. Kit crashes into Dottie. She drops the ball. Racine wins. Kit's a hero. So after the game, when Kit is autographing the balls for the two kids, the way she just keeps like looking up to make sure Dottie's watching, I was like, oh, go fuck yourself. And then the kid is telling Dottie she's going to stick around. She's going to stay here. Some of the girls are talking about getting, you know, jobs and all that. Dottie, of course, is heading back to Oregon and starting a family and all that. What else? Jimmy turns down a chance to manage a AAA team. He's going to stay with the Peaches. And that's like pretty much it for that time era. Then we're back in the present day. To the Baseball Hall of Fame, the opening of this exhibit. Kit and Dottie have a very emotional reunion there. Kit's whole family is with her. And this is a cool moment, getting to see all the characters again. Like, Ira's still there. Ira's still around.
You know what has always struck me as weird about this scene is when they're about to cut the ribbon and... Oh, who was it that says, like, no, this doesn't feel
Doris.
Right, and then gives the scissors. Yeah, gives the scissors over. It's like, you know what? Not your exhibit. I've always felt like you know what?
Can it, bitch? Snip.
You're lucky, lucky they invited you, I think.
I want you to play that guy so bad. Not really your decision.
This doesn't feel right. Give the scissors over. No, I'm not giving the scissors over.
I have one job here, guys. The big emotional ending, and then we get the Madonna song over the end credits. This used to be my playground. So such a downer of a song to go out on, I always thought.
Yeah.
Okay, so final thoughts on A League of Their Own, Donna?
I love it. I love it.
Chris, what are your final thoughts?
Carlos?
Put that on the box for the movie.
Is that really it, Donna?
I love it so much.
Okay.
I love it so much. I do. And I will never forget crying about Injustice and my mom being so baffled. Like, it was over. You were fine. What's going on all of a sudden? Actually, I kept a tally this time. I don't know if either of you would be interested to know or take a guess at how many times I cried during this movie.
Definitely when Boopy Skadoopy loses her husband.
You're right, because I do have a heart, unlike some people in this podcast.
When Kit gets lifted up on everyone's shoulders at the end.
Okay, so that's two. Is that your guess? Two?
How many? I thought we were guessing when you cried, not the number times.
The
number of times you teared up.
I think it's four times.
I was going to say five.
The correct answer is 12.
God damn! What movie did you watch?
I cried this whole flipping movie.
Did you watch the supercut of this? That's also mixed in with Schindler's List. Is that what happened? You get to see what's happening in Germany at the same time.
Oh my god! Like, as like it was, you know, the first like probably 15 or 20 minutes of this movie, and I'd already teared up twice. It was like, I got to keep a tally. This is too much. It's so emotional. Everything about it just like gets me right there. So I cried 12 times. Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget crying over Injustice. Okay, Batman. That's one of my favorite quotes of yours you've ever said. That's like a pretty tall order. I'll never forget crying over Injustice.
That's when she became Batwoman. She's meeting with Batman, and Bruce is like, "So, what made you turn into a superhero?" She's like, "A League of Their Own."
I lost my parents. I watched A League of Their Own.
That was a good movie,
Carlos.
That was my favorite movie,
Carlos. What about you?
This is my favorite baseball movie. Like, that's not even. It's not even close. The other baseball movies that I do like are very, like, kid-oriented, what's the one? Little Big League, Rookie of the Year, those movies. I'm not, like, a Field of Dreams guy. I'm not the Natural guy. So this is the only, like, maybe serious movie with grown-ups about baseball that I even enjoy.
Oh, okay.
So, and it doesn't get old, which I think is amazing. It doesn't feel like nothing about it feels dated to me.
Well, part of that's the period setting, I think, goes a long way.
Yeah, part of it, absolutely. You know, the politics of it haven't changed such that it feels awkward at any points. Because the politics of the movie, again, we're 50 years old at the time the movie came out. So, and, you know, this is one of my favorite Tom Hanks performances. This is my favorite Gina Davis performance, everything about this movie is so great. Mm. I have nothing bad to say about it, which I think is insane.
No, yeah, this is a great movie. And I have to say again, you know, the stuff I brought up before about Kit and Dottie, it's again, it was because we were watching it for the show. It's not stuff that ever bothered me before. It didn't hinder my enjoyment in the slightest this time either. I still think we brought up a lot of very valid points and criticisms, but it doesn't make me love this movie any less. I mentioned that Penny Marshall is a filmmaker that loves to shoot the big moments without earning them, but that's even secondary to the fact that the stuff that works here just works so damn well. It's so sweet-natured. I love most of the performances. Tom Hanks in particular is just so fucking good in this. It may not be totally historically accurate, and it could probably benefit from a clearer focus on one or two of its characters, but this is just such a feel-good movie. It's like this really nice sweet spot right in the middle of something like Field of Dreams, and then on the other end of the spectrum, the Sandlot. You know, it's not as weighty as the former, not as goofy as the latter, but like just sort of right there in the middle doing its own thing. But yeah, great, great movie. Donna, what time is it?
It's time to play Who Would You Be and Who Would You F?
You know what? Let's start with Donna, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, Carlos, who are your picks for Donna?
Donna would be... I think Donna would be Jimmy Dugan.
Okay.
I think Donna would F... I think this is just true in real life. I think Donna would F David Strathern.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I said... Okay, so for who Donna would be, okay, well, can I say that Nelson did remind me of a certain young man that you at one point seemed very close to be settling down with? but no, I did not go in that direction with this. I said Kit because, like I was saying, getting it earlier, mm-hmm. even though you're an only child, I was thinking maybe there's something there in terms of learning to be a part of a team and maybe feeling more pressure to prove yourself sometimes because, you know, there were moments growing up where you were maybe more isolated. And but just without the constant whining and pettiness, we'll just none of that. But other than that, yeah, I said you would be Kit and I said you would F Stillwell because that's the way love goes.
Oh, God.
Callbacks, because we're 20 episodes deep. No, I said you would F Buff Dean Martin from the Suds Bucket, the guy that Madonna spends most of the time dancing with.
Oh, okay.
He looks like a very muscular rat packer.
Buff Dean Martin.
Buff Dean Martin. This is, I don't know, this might be the first time that you're both partly right.
Well,
I would absolutely be Kit because Kit, I love Lori Petty so much. I think she's got it somewhere like a really cool second act to her career. I really hope so because she's just an awesome actress. I really like her. And I would totally F David Stratham, however you say his
name. Oh, nice. Wow.
Yeah, he's, I always was like, oh, Ira. yeah, way to go, guys. Thank you.
All right.
Nice. So well.
So, Carlos, I said, would be Ernie Cappadino. And wait, I can tell
Ernie
I'm wrong.
Cappadino. Oh, that's John
Lovitz. Yeah.
Okay. So I forgot his name.
It stinks.
He's one of the. I don't know. I want to see Carlos play that part too. And I said you would F Ellen Sue.
I said that Carlos would be Jimmy Dugan and that he would F Boopy Spagoopy.
Boopy Skadoopy Spagoopy. But Goopy makes it sound like she's got something wrong downstairs. It's like a very unfortunate nickname.
What? I love the way you assign value to gibberish.
That's my life.
It's Skadoopy because Skaboopy is ridiculous. Oh, God. Donna, you're 100% correct.
I win!
Oh, nice.
You win. Yeah, Betty Spaghetti, getting it done.
I could tell because I wanted, that was my initial thought, and then I was like, I don't know, will he be weirded out that it's Penny Marshall's daughter? And then you found out during the episode that it was Penny Marshall's daughter, and I was like, nope.
Why would that weird him out?
He's Skadoopy.
He's not going to have to meet her mom.
I mean,
that's true.
Know. I don't know.
And Betty Spaghetti's totes available.
I was going to say, and she's very fragile. This is a good time to swoop in.
Poor thing.
She's probably
inherited a very fine baseball card collection.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't matter that Jimmy ripped up that card, huh?
Definitely.
For that.
Okay. The first time I ever saw this movie, that was what went through my head.
Betty gets out of the room and goes, oh, thank God. this.
He was going to beat me.
I'm crying because I'm so happy. Okay, so who would I be? Who would I F? I was stretching. I did not mean to make it sound like. And who would I? Sorry.
Gross.
I think you would be David Strathairn because you are a fan of putting together entire leagues of baseball.
This is true.
It's a good point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And you would F Marla Hooch. For no reason that I can come up with.
A lot of night games.
Donna.
Is that your answer? Are you done?
I'm going to say Marla Hooch and just stick with it because I'm not going to come up with a better one.
Are you sure? I think you could just fucking throw a dart
like
and hit
20
a better.
Girls in this movie.
Yeah.
Okay. To be fair. You would be David Strathairn because you like to build entire leagues from the ground up, and you would F Taya Leone. There you go. Dropping the mic.
Yeah. I actually thought about Taya Leone too, because I think I remember Chris having a thing for Taya Leone. And I said you would be Jimmy Dugan.
Okay. So
he's the best.
For who I would be, honestly, I almost said Dottie because she just wakes up awesome and can't stop being awesome. But, I'm going to say, yeah, Jimmy, after he gets his shit together, because he gets to do what I never could, which is manage a baseball team. But so Carlos's answer also works. Ira also, same thing. And then for who I would F, I guess it was maybe almost Madonna. Yeah, logically it should be Madonna. I do really like her as a brunette, too. But Gina Davis is just so fucking radiant in this movie, and that really is like the only word I was trying to think of it the whole time, and finally it was like, oh, radiant, that's it, that's what she is here. But yeah, I'm gonna have to go with Taya Leone. Dark hair and blue eyes gets me every time. So okay, that's it for us. If you're a fan of the show, don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. Subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher if you haven't already. Like our Facebook page to find out what we're looking at next and to share your own memories of these films. Let us know if you have suggestions for other titles we should revisit, and we'll see you next time.